Turn your please for our second reading to 2 Samuel chapter 15. Second Samuel 15, verse 1. Hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired word of God. And it came to pass after this that Absalom prepared him chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. And Absalom rose up early and stood beside the way of the gate. And it was so that when any man had a controversy, any man that had a controversy came to the king for judgment, then Absalom called unto him and said, "Of what city art thou?" And he said, "Thy servant is of one of the tribes of Israel." And Absalom said unto him, "See, thy matters are good and right, but there is no man deputed of the king to hear thee." Absalom said moreover, "Oh, that I were made judge in the land, that every man which hath any suit or cause might come unto me, and I would do him justice." And it was so that when any man came nigh to him to do him obeisance, he put forth his hand and took him, and he kissed him, and on this matter did Absalom to all Israel that came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. And it came to pass after 40 years that Absalom said unto the king, "I pray thee, let me go and pay my vow which I have vowed unto the Lord in Hebron. For thy servant vowed a vow while I abode at Geshur in Syria, saying, If the Lord shall bring me again indeed to Jerusalem, then I will serve the Lord." And the king said unto him, "Go in peace." So he arose and went to Hebron. But Absalom sent spies throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, "As soon as ye hear the sound of the trumpet, then ye shall say, Absalom reigneth in Hebron." And with Absalom went 200 men out of Jerusalem that were called, and they went in their simplicity, and they knew not anything. And Absalom sent for Ahithophel the Gilonite, David's counselor, from his city, even from Gilo, while he offered sacrifices. And the conspiracy was strong, for the people increased continually with Absalom. And there came a messenger to David, saying, "The hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom." And David said unto all his servants that were with him at Jerusalem, "Arise, and let us flee, for we shall not else escape from Absalom. Make speed to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly, and bring evil upon us, and smite the city with the edge of the sword." And the king's servants said unto the king, "Behold, thy servants are ready to do whatsoever my lord the king shall appoint." And the king went forth, and all his household after him. And the king left 10 women, which were concubines, to keep the house. And the king went forth, and all the people after him, and tarried in a place that was afar off. And all his servants passed on beside him, and all the Kerethites, and all the Pelethites, and all the Gittites, 600 men which came after him from Gath, passed on before the king. Then said the king to Ittai the Gittite, "Wherefore goest thou also with us? Return to thy place and abide with the king, for thou art a stranger and also an exile. Whereas thou camest but yesterday, should I this day make thee go up and down with us? Seeing I go whither I may, return thou and take back thy brethren. Mercy and truth be with thee." And Ittai answered the king and said, "As the Lord liveth, and as my lord the king liveth, surely in what place my lord the king shall be, whether in death or life, even there also will thy servant be." And David said to Ittai, "Go and pass over." And Ittai the Gittite passed over, and all his men, and all the little ones that were with him. And all the country wept with a loud voice, and all the people passed over. The king also himself passed over the brook Kidron, and all the people passed over toward the way of the wilderness. And lo, Zadok also, and all the Levites were with him, bearing the ark of the covenant of God. And they set down the ark of God, and Abiathar the priest went up, until all the people had done passing out of the city. And the king said unto Zadok, "Carry back the ark of God into the city." If I shall find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me again and show me both it and his habitation. But if he thus say, I have no delight in thee, behold, here am I. Let him do to me as seemeth good to him. The king said also unto Zadok the priest, Art not thou a seer? Return into the city in peace, and your two sons with you, Ahimaaz, thy son, and Jonathan, the son of Abiathar. See, I will tarry in the plain of the wilderness until there come word from you to certify me. So Zadok, therefore, and Abiathar carried the ark of God again to Jerusalem, and they tarried there. And David went up by the ascent of Mount Olivet, and wept as he went up, and he had his head covered, and he went barefoot, and all the people that was with him covered every man his head, and they went up weeping as they went up. And one told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. And it came to pass that when David was come to the top of the mount where he worshipped God, behold, Hushai the Archite came to meet him with his coat rent and earth upon his head. Unto whom David said, If thou passest on with me, then thou shalt be a burden unto me. But if thou return to the city and say unto Absalom, I will be with thy servant, O king, as I will be thy servant, O king, as I have been thy father's servant hitherto, so will I now also be thy servant. Then mayest thou for me defeat the counsel of Ahithophel. And hast thou not there with thee Zadok and Abiathar the priests? Therefore it shall be that what things soever thou shalt hear out of the king's house, thou shalt tell it to Zadok and Abiathar the priests. Behold, they have there with them their two sons, Ahimaaz, Zadok's son, and Jonathan, Abiathar's son. And by them ye shall send unto me everything that ye can hear. So Hushai, David's friend, came into the city, and Absalom came into Jerusalem. May God add his blessing to the reading and to the hearing of his most holy word. We left in chapter 14 with Absalom finally coming in to see the king, and he bowed before the king, and the king kissed Absalom. Now we have Absalom's true purpose for his coming back into Jerusalem, and all of the machinations in the burning of Joab's field, in the sending of the widow woman with Joab, and finally Joab's sponsorship of bringing him back into the king's presence. Let us remember about Absalom that he ought to have died because he was a murderer. But David did not do the part of a judge. And so now David will indeed pay the price for that lack of the execution of his duty. This is also a part of the judgment that to come on David's house for his sin with Bathsheba, which was also a matter of him not going about to do his duty, being out in the field with the army. So we have then Absalom appointing himself 50 men to run before him. In other words, as Absalom had a chariot, whenever he went somewhere, he had 50 guys that were in front of him to clear the way. That's what you do when you're full of yourself. You appoint men to clear the way for you, to talk up your person, to bring you honor. And so Absalom, full of himself, set 50 men to run before him and to announce him and to introduce him wherever he went. The other thing that Absalom did was he took to himself the seat of judgment. And so Absalom himself ingratiated himself to all of the people by judging in their favor. All of this was to prepare for the day when he would rebel against his father and chase him from the city. This is a long time coming. Absalom had this plan in mind for a very long time. And he had laid the groundwork for this over and again in various different activities. He ingratiated himself to the people by insinuating that there was something lacking in the judgment of David as it currently stood. Oh, if I were made judge in the land, certainly I would judge uprightly and the people would come to me and they would receive justice. And whenever anyone came to Absalom, he sat down in a judgment seat that he himself had erected, and Absalom received them and took them by the hand and kissed them on the hand as if to say, you can trust me in my judgments because I love you. Let's just make sure and be very clear here. The only person that Absalom loved was Absalom. And everything that Absalom did was to advance Absalom's cause. And so the people, through flattery, gave their hearts to Absalom, and Absalom willingly took them and stored them up in his little storehouse where he might call upon them when he needed them so that he might rebel against his father the king. In contrast to that, we see David's humility, Absalom's self-aggrandizement, and David's humility. First of all, Absalom said to David, I need to go over to Hebron. Is that right? No, I'm sorry, Geshur. I need to go to Geshur, and that's because... it is Hebron. I need to go to Hebron because I vowed a vow to the Lord. And I said to the Lord, if you'll bring me back into favor in my nation, then I will sacrifice a sacrifice unto you. And so notice what Absalom did. He chose a religious device, an act of worship, as the pretense for what he would do to gather the rebellion against David. That is an aggravation of his rebellion, isn't it? In that he took a religious observance and turned it to a sin. It was a lie. It was not the purpose he went to Hebron. And yet it was him feigning some kind of piety. So Absalom had 200 men that he called out of Jerusalem, those men that he had judged for in the past. And they came, it said, in the simplicity of their heart. In other words, they didn't know that he was going to rebel. He hadn't let them in on the conspiracy, but he planned that when he rose up as a conspirator, that they would follow him at that point. And he planned correctly. And then he also sent for Ahithophel, the Gilonite. Now, we have to understand something about Ahithophel. Ahithophel was one of those guys that no one thought they could do without. His wisdom, his sagacity was so valuable that neither David nor Absalom thought that they would be successful without him. And when David heard that Ahithophel had gone with Absalom, he prayed and said, Lord, turn his counsel into foolishness. Because we'll read in the next chapter that everything that Ahithophel said was like an oracle of God, as wise as it was. And so Absalom figured, there's no way that I can prosecute this rebellion without the advice of Ahithophel. And so he also called for Ahithophel, and Ahithophel went to be with Absalom instead of resisting that overture and fleeing with David. Okay, so verse 13 then, there came a messenger to David and said, the hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom. And David said unto all his servants that were with him at Jerusalem, arise and let us flee. Does that strike anyone else but me as that David doesn't seem surprised here? David knew that he had behaved himself unwisely toward Absalom. This is like one of those things, one of those troubles that you know is out there on the horizon, but you keep putting it off and putting it off and putting it off, handling it, thinking that it will somehow remedy itself or it will never come to its true fruition. And yet, when it does, you think to yourself, I knew that would happen. I think this is what happened here with David. And so he understands that his own complicity. And so the first thing that David does is he gets up and he flees the city. Now, it would have been very easy for David to amass a force, to set up garrisons in the city, to station troops just outside the wall even, and to mount a defense. But David wants this to be, at this point in his career, a bloodless coup. And so he leaves the city so that there would be no bloodshed. David also, I think, perhaps has in mind that this is indeed the judgment of the Lord. And so David rises and accepts this providence from the Lord and moves out of the city with 600 men, but not just any men. 600 men from Gath. Does that strike you like it strikes me? Gath. Remember the families and the kinsmen of Goliath. Those folks. And so David flees the city, and with him 600 Gittites. And the leader of the troop, Ittai, comes to him. And David says, "You've only been with us a short while. You're exiles from your city. I cannot draw you into this with me. Go back to the city and serve Absalom." Notice David's selflessness there. And Ittai says, "Wherever my lord the king goes, in life or in death, there will I be at his side." How heartwarming that must have been to David to have 600 men of Gath at his side when his own son had rebelled against him. And so the Lord does provide for David some comforts in the midst of his flight. So he had 600 Gittites at his disposal. The loyalty of Ittai is heartwarming and no doubt was an encouragement to the king. And David goes on weeping even in the midst of these encouragements, because there is obviously discouragement as well. And so the usefulness of this section is found in that David, even in the midst of many things that would crush lesser men, not only finds encouragement, but finds encouragement to go forward, to go on. And that in the most peaceable way possible. All right, so then in verses 24 through 30, we have Zadok and Abiathar. And they come with the Ark of God. Now that would have been a strategic thing if David were minded with strategy and to press his own cause. That would have been a very strategic thing for him to have the Ark of God with him. With the Ark of God, he could have drawn out many men to himself. Right? This usurper here in Jerusalem doesn't even have the ark. The ark is with me. This is the support that I have from the Lord, evident in that the priests came out with me. And of course, remember that the priests were very skilled in fighting as well. But David sends the ark back. He sends the ark back. And notice what David says. "If the Lord finds favor in me, he will bring me back to the ark and to himself and to his worship. If the Lord finds no favor in me, then I will be separated from the Lord forever." And so David then knows where the ark belongs, refuses to pollute the worship of God or to disfigure, deface the worship of God through his own devices, sending it back, as it were, where it belongs, in Jerusalem, to the tent that he had pitched for it there. It is the Lord's city. It is the Lord's ark. And so it belongs there. The worship of God belongs to God. Right? So there's an application for our day, for those who would separate from a new church at every turn, right, and form a new church at every turn. Let us remember these wise words of David here. The ark belongs with the city. And then let us also see his faith in the Lord, that he would be restored. If not, then such was acceptable to David. His life was in the hand of the Lord. And we see the weeping of the rest of his company in this section also. The men went on weeping and covering their heads in shame and going barefoot as servants would go. And so it is a time of great humbling and humiliation for them. So then, verses 31 through the end, in the final section, we have David's prayer concerning Ahithophel. Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. Now notice this, that when it came to pass, when David was come to the top of the mount, and you have to know a little bit about the geography of Jerusalem. So they passed through the brook Kidron. That's the valley just outside the walls. That was the dump. That was the sink where they threw everything that they didn't want. The valley of Kidron, where the brook ran. And then on the other side, the Mount of Olives. And so they ascended the Mount of Olives and got to the top of the mountain. And when they stopped at the top of the mountain, and commentators are divided here, it may be that's where they stopped because it was the top. And, you know, as the top of a mountain, a place that was more conducive to worship because it was on the top of a mountain. Or it may be that it was a strategic place to stop and you could keep a good lookout from there. And probably both are true. That David stops to worship. He stops to worship the Lord. He's fleeing for his life, yet he stops to worship. Let's remember that. That there is no time in our lives where it is unfit to worship the Lord. To bow, to take a moment, to consider, to ponder his goodness, to pray for his kindness and deliverance, and so on. And then finally, we see his interaction with Hushai, the Archite. And he is another counselor. And David sends him back to be a thwart to the counsel of Ahithophel, to cancel out counsel of Ahithophel, to be a voice of dissent. And when we get to the next chapter, we see how important it was that David sent Hushai the Archite back, and how the Lord made use of that decision to overturn the counsel of Ahithophel, which certainly would have meant the death of David and the overturning of the kingdom. So then we have David keeping his wits about him, even in the midst of very difficult circumstances. You know, it's an interesting thing. Who is Hushai? He's a counselor. And yet it's David's idea that he go back. Hushai wanted to be with David. Let me counsel you out here in the wilderness. I'll be your counselor here. David said, no, there's a better place for you to be. And that would be with Absalom. And so you go and you tell Absalom that you will be loyal to him as you've been loyal to me. And it turns out that that was an extremely good decision. And so let us also then recognize that there are times in our lives when we will be afflicted, as David is here. And oft times when we are afflicted, we would be tempted to make use of such times to make bad decisions. But David's good example here is that while afflicted, having worshipped the Lord, having maintained a propriety as much as he was able in those extreme circumstances, then is equipped to make a good decision, a solid decision. And so no matter what strait in which we find ourselves then, let us do the same. Let us devote ourselves to prayer, to the means available to us, to worshiping the Lord, and then let us make wise decisions pertaining to the difficulties that rise up. Okay, well, thus ends the reading then of 2 Samuel 15.